We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildebrand. That guy over there, the one and only Dan Rubenstein. We are, again, the Solid Verbal. SolidVerbal.com is the website where you can find out all that we have to offer, be it podcasts, be it articles that have been published over the last couple weeks. We are really now gearing up for the start of the season as we round the home stretch now.
Whoa.
Into our final week of conference previews. So we did part one of the Big 12 on Friday, August the 6th.
I just hit my knee on the table. Continue.
We're doing part two now on August the 9th. And then on Wednesday and Friday of this week that we're in now, we've got the Pac-12 North and the Pac-12 South. And then I think we're going to do a national preview of some sort next week and a couple other oddball shows before we actually get into the season. So the season's getting awfully big in the window, Dan, and we're now rounding the home stretch here into our final week of previews. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. And obviously go back and listen to Big Ten if you haven't, ACC and Notre Dame if you haven't. We included G5 conference previews within all of those preview episodes. So yeah, we're doing second part of Big 12 Conference USA Today and a couple independents. I'm great, Ty. I am great. My voice feels pretty good.
Good.
I'm still trying to figure out the schedule for the season ahead with two young children.
Yeah.
You know what? It's not the children as much as it is Jody with an I and keeping a happy household as I have to
is
work
it time,
all day Saturday and half of Sundays.
Is it time to do another How's Your Marriage show on the Solid Verbal?
Right now, it's great.
Okay.
It's more of the anticipation. Luckily, we have family in the area. We have people who can help out with all of those things. But yeah, it's going to be the most challenging in terms of juggling act family-wise that I've ever had. But, you know, working in college football has predated my relationship with her and my children. So, you know, it's
grandfathered. You got to pick one or the other. That's the way this thing
works.
Very
true. And I got to make pizza. So, you know, I got a lot that I got to do.
Verballers.com. Any marriage-related show will be featured on Verballers.com,
correct,
which is our super secret Patreon, our growing Patreon.
There will be a late October, 3 to 4 a.m., me sneaking into the studio.
I need to talk to somebody. Let's turn on Discord live video. If anybody's on, they can weigh in too.
That's what it'll be.
And somebody will be on Discord at 3 or 4 a.m. We have an international crowd. We have a West Coast crowd. Yeah.
Oh, we have, by the way, just in terms of promoting the verballers.com situation, the Patreon situation, our Discord, I'm just going to name a few people that it's just like, you got Dan Klobuchar, Alan Vaughn, you've got Benty, you've got Dr. J, you've got Luke, you've got, I mean, Luke BK specifically, Matt Pergo, Spandrew. We've got some hit makers here.
Yeah,
so Cole has been very active. If you like food, we've got a recipes channel in there. Cole has been extremely active there. He's a great cook. So all sorts of fun people doing fun things in the Discord channel, and it's going to be hopping during the football season. Shall we move on?
Verballers.com. Yeah. So, yeah. Okay. Let's get on with the Big 12. On the last show that we did, I got the Texas schools and Iowa State. On today's show, you've got the Oklahoma schools, the Kansas schools, and mm-hmm. West Virginia.
Correct. Confirmed.
Oklahoma is the prohibitive favorite to win the Big 12. I talked through the Iowa State preview and why I felt Iowa State was a worthy challenger. Not to say they're going to beat Oklahoma, but they've got the horses that they want to run with them. Give me the case for Oklahoma as being head and shoulders above everybody else in the Big 12 and a legitimate playoff, a legitimate national championship contender.
They have the best proven quarterback in the country and potentially the best proven offensive mind in the country, joining forces with new offensive talent coming in and getting healthier and perhaps emerging against a schedule that's pretty good. I think that's probably a fantastic place to start, especially with an emerging defense on the other side of the field holding up their end of the bargain in ways that they have not necessarily before, at least 2020. 2020 was a very impressive step forward. So, no, their starting point is phenomenal with Spencer Rattler able to make, as you like to put it, all the throws, can really spin it. So, they're in a fantastic place that no other Big 12 team can claim to be just because of the high-end talent involved with Oklahoma in addition to the experience and track record.
Last season, lost two in a row.
Correct. Started 1-2.
K-State and Iowa State, right?
They lose to K-State and Iowa State. Still superb offensively, though I think... I'm just talking overall. They took a step back on the ground because Ramondre Stevenson, who's now gone, was not able to play those first five games because of suspension that carried over from the 2019 season. Spencer Rattler is a very strong quarterback. This was not a team that necessarily bombed the ball downfield as successfully and had a big play receiver in the vein of CeeDee Lamb, D.D. Westbrook, you know, Sterling Shepard, Ryan Broyles, Hollywood Brown, like all those guys were a step or a couple steps above where Oklahoma was last year. But Marvin Mims emerged, Theo Weiss, Jaden Hazelwood is still sort of yet to take that full expected next step or two. Charleston Rambo he was there forever, but now he's leaving and he's at Miami. So that's going to be a big element to things moving forward, that they didn't necessarily have that pop on the outside that they were used to, nor at running back until Ramondre Stevenson came back. But I think the interesting thing to me about where they were last year, and I think where they're going to improve this year, is a lot is made of the skill positions and the offensive fireworks, but they had truly great offensive lines that they didn't necessarily have last year. I think the offensive line took a step back, but I imagine it's going to get back to the level of expectations this year and moving forward. So I expect Oklahoma to look more familiar with Spencer Rattler now having a full real offseason under his belt. He had it a couple of years ago, but as an entrenched starter, I'm expecting a really nice step forward from the Oklahoma offense, which is great because defensively last year, they were crazy impressive for the most part. For the most part, this defense, highlighted by their performance against, I think, Iowa State in the Big 12 championship game, they played urgently, they played quickly, they wrapped up in ways that they weren't able to in years past. Oklahoma's defense was full-on impressive last year, both in terms of production and just buy-in and how hard they played. So, and the talent level, I think, is up with that defense as well. So
yeah, right.
I am fully encouraged by Oklahoma and the expectations, which I think top out at national champion, which might be a little much unless a receiver or two truly emerge. But Oklahoma is in a place in terms of being a complete team that I don't think they have fully been there in that place these last few years.
The offensive line, I believe, is the best in the nation, according to our friend Phil Steele.
Is that true? I don't know, man.
Phil Steele has Oklahoma over Ohio State, Washington, Iowa State, and Utah.
I would probably take at this point, in terms of proven commodities, I know they add Wanya Morris, the Tennessee transfer, at one of the tackle spots. I still think I would take Evan Neal and whichever four guys are lining up next to Evan Neal at Bama, and probably the strength of those two tackles at Ohio State, I would take them. But Oklahoma's still in a great place.
Yeah, I mean, and just looking nationally, if I expand out on that, he's got them first in the offensive line unit, but
really
first at quarterback. First at quarterback, which of course is on the arm of Spencer Rattler. Fourth at running back. Second at wide receiver. Obviously first at offensive line.
Wait, second nationally at wide receiver?
That is correct.
Man, that's a lot of optimism from Phillip.
Six of the top seven back from 2020. This is per him. This is not my words.
I understand. Marvin Mims is very good.
Third defensive line. At linebacker, ninth. And then in the secondary, third. So Phil Steele is all in on Oklahoma this year. He's all in on Oklahoma. It is not without good reason. But I think the bigger point here is Spencer Rattler is clearly going to get most of the attention. He's going to be the main talking point. Oklahoma's a lot more than just Spencer Rattler.
Of course, of course. And now they get Kennedy Brooks back, who opted out last year, and they pair him with, it's Eric Gray, who I think is going to be taking on an all-purpose role in a way that there weren't many purposes to the Tennessee offense.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Eric Gray, and then Theo Weiss was out during the spring with sort of a mysterious leg injury. He's apparently full go, according to Lincoln Riley. So Oklahoma's in a fantastic place in terms of upside of their offensive skill talent. It's again, though, who is that enormous CeeDee Lamb level problem that's going to command attention from everybody? And I hope it's Marvin Mims. I hope it's Jaden Hazelwood. I hope it's, you know, that's a great duo or trio to start with Theo Weiss, but we'll see. We'll absolutely see. That to me is a looming question, but you're right about the defense. You're right about how they stack up nationally to me, just with the step they took forward last year. I think there's NFL caliber talent on all three levels. They became an aggressive problem for everybody. I mean, I don't know they gave up a lot to Texas, but otherwise a really impressive step forward for Alex Grinch's defense last year. Their first real test, by the way, if we're going to get into traffic. I don't know if you have any more thoughts about the way the squad and the appeal of this year is laid out. They have Kansas State October 2nd, and that's followed by UT and Dallas, of course. The end stretch of traveling to Baylor, which I know per your thoughts on the Bears last episode, that doesn't scare you tremendously. But then Iowa State and Bedlam on the road, there's some danger there. There's absolutely some danger there. So tricky at the end, but otherwise pretty workable. Is that okay to say?
It's extremely workable.
Yeah.
It's the 51st most difficult schedule in college football. And, you know, if you look around the rest of the conference, it is the easiest schedule of all the teams in the Big 12. And again, goes back to the point that they don't have to play themselves, but it's very workable. It's very workable. There aren't any huge gauntlets on here. You have to like what you see. Zooming back out to the Phil Steele point, Phil hasn't won in the national championship. He's all in on Oklahoma this year. So it's an exciting team. The schedule sets up well. I did not look at the over-under. I can pull that up now. Where are you at in terms of where this team
comes
down? 11. Ooh, 11 is the over-under. So Vegas is seeing one loss on the schedule.
That's how I have them at 11-1, which still might have them as a playoff team. They can run the table. There is no obvious, full, complete killer on this schedule, all due respect to Iowa State and Kansas State, to whom they are on a losing streak against whom. So 11-1, I think, is the most realistic thing that they're just going to drop something odd. But even their losses last year, that comes at the very beginning of Spencer Rattler's starting career. And yes, he looked a little bit shaky late in those games. There were, I'm sure, 3 to 5 throws he wishes he could get back. But I'm also glossing over the fact that he had some pretty awful drops in that Iowa State loss that were not on him, that he threw dimes that were not pulled in. So the opportunities were there against those teams. They're not blown out by Kansas State and Iowa State. So that to me is, you know, encouraging. And now that he again has this full off season to really gel and get comfortable as the entrenched starter and perhaps best quarterback in the country, I mean, it's nothing less than a huge win for the Sooners. So 11-1 seems right. The ceiling to me, just without obvious electricity on offense and the depth of talent, I think, on defense needed to probably get over the top and win the national championship. Like, I think the starters are there, but what happens if you get a couple key injuries? I think the depth isn't fully there on defense yet to really take them seriously as a national championship threat, but anything can happen. I have their ceiling as playoff, but losing in the playoff.
I think that's fair, Dan. I think that's a fair assessment. Let's go to the other side of Bedlam.
Okay,
And let's talk about Oklahoma State here. Oklahoma State went 8-3 a year ago. And look, they're another team where I think they've got this track record for offense. But the offense, to a large extent last year, had a lot of frustrating bits to it, which I'm sure you'll get into. They were still primarily led by defensive efficiency. It's where they made their hay last year spite of so much of that offensive uncertainty.
Oh, absolutely. That's where they are. Oklahoma State is in a fascinating place because the best of Spencer Sanders is really interesting. We just don't know when that happens. And they returned Chuba Hubbard last year and he was beat up and not himself. But also they had the best receiver in the conference in Tylan Wallace and were not able to sort of take a meaningful step forward offensively. And it's been a down couple years for the Pokes offensively. And look, Spencer Sanders got hurt early on and they had to lean on a freshman early on. And he came back Sanders came back and had some interesting games. I don't know. The defense gave up some bigger plays, but that's nitpicking because this is another defense with NFL caliber talent on all three levels. They lost that Texas game in infuriating fashion, I'm sure, if you're a Poke fan. They lost that game in a winning effort. It was just freak turnovers and real sloppy offensive decision-making led to losing an exceedingly winnable game. The TCU and Oklahoma losses were legitimate losses that they just got outplayed. But that Texas game, I'm sure, either Poke fans have fully blocked it out or are still stewing about it.
Yeah.
By the way, their appeal is they still have pretty good running backs.
LD Brown.
Des Jackson emerged. Yeah. And LD Brown. Receiver and offensive line are sort of unproven. The offensive line was an issue last year. This was a disruptive defense that should be once again. So that's, an amazing place to start.
Yeah, the line falls into that category of having a lot back. But is that good?
Right.
Is that a good thing?
And Spencer Sanders has had interception and turnover issues during the duration of his career, and having a shaky offensive line or stretches of shaky offensive line play aren't super helpful. So hoping it all comes together for the Pokes in that regard. But
the appeal is that hope, right? That's what college football sells us, that hope, that appeal, that curiosity about what can a team do if they bring all the pieces together. Last year was certainly not that year for Mike Gundy. He just didn't have it. And we'll see if they can get a full healthy year out of Spencer Sanders and get some of that consistency. The schedule's very backloaded.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a really good chance a team like an Oklahoma State starts out the year 5-0. I think it's available to them. Mm-hmm. Kansas State, Boise State on the road's not an easy contest, but as they get into mid-October, that's when you get to the heavy hitters. That's when you go to Texas, to Iowa State on back-to-back weeks. They've got the Kansas bye week before they go to West Virginia and close out at home against TCU, on the road at Tech, our sandwich supreme in the Big 12, and then obviously close out the year last week in November against Oklahoma in the Bedlam game.
And important to remember, as I mentioned in the last episode, Mike Gundy absolutely owns Matt Campbell and Brock Purdy. Brock Purdy's sort of real, I mean, his lowest moments potentially, or not potentially, but arguably have come against Oklahoma State. So a feather in the cowboy hat. If Spencer Sanders protects the ball, if somebody like, I mean, Brennan Presley, I know, is one of the bigger names. He's a bigger name, tinier dude, but emerged in their bowl game at receiver. If the ball is protected, if they only lose to teams that are clearly better and more talented and better prepared than they are, nine wins is not off the table to me. Just because of that starting point of interesting offensive, actually not interesting, but you know, the best of Spencer Sanders is interesting, and a good defense, the quarterback and defense thing. So nine wins is not off the table to me.
The over-under is 7.5.
Okay.
For Oklahoma State.
I'd be cautiously optimistic about the over.
Especially with the defense, right? The offense, frankly, has been all over the map for Oklahoma State.
It's been two or three pretty down years, uncharacteristically so.
Since you could really feel confident about it. But defensively, they've been very good. And they will be again. It's going to be a team led by defense. Eight guys back on that side of the football. One final question about Oklahoma State before we get to West Virginia. How much of a contender should we consider Oklahoma State in the Big 12?
For the conference?
Yeah. Is that a fair question to ask with this team?
Oh, it's for sure a fair question. Okay. If I'm saying that if Spencer Sanders protects the ball and they don't throw games away, that they're a nine-ish win team, it's a totally fair question. I think they are not built to win double-digit wins. Okay. So I'm going to say that's just fine. Shy of contender status.
Interesting. Okay. Let's go to West Virginia. West Virginia was 6-4 last year. It's Neil Brown's third year. He comes over from Troy, where he had a lot of success.
Mm-hmm.
Which direction is West Virginia going?
It's a good question.
I feel like we all had a moment from the national college football perspective when they brought in Jared Dagey to play quarterback. And it felt like he was better than what they had before, but we didn't know for sure.
Right. The Austin Kendall era was not amazing.
It was not great when Austin Kendall came over from Oklahoma. And so Dagey was an improvement. But I guess now as we enter like this next stage of things for West Virginia, the question really becomes, is this a thing going in the right direction? I don't know the answer to that. Maybe you do. The over-under is 6.5 for West Virginia going into the 2021 season. Looking broadly at what they did last year, the defense was pretty good. The offense, not so much. Very inconsistent on offense. So where are they headed?
So odd. Yeah. It's a good question. It's so odd to think about the narrative shift within the Big 12 that we are sitting here having conversations about Baylor, about TCU, about West Virginia, about Oklahoma State, and saying, yeah, but where's the offensive pop from where they were 5, 6, 7 years
ago? Insane.
Where West Virginia is a team that is led by defense, considering the point to which this defense cratered. They were so strong up front and snake bitten health wise, but still very strong, led by their defense. Offensively, they don't necessarily have dudes out wide, and there were drop issues galore last year. I think Letty Brown is a really nice piece, but he's not, I don't think the electricity is necessarily there, but he is dependable enough. And Jared Dagey's fine. He's another quarterback who it seems like he plays on a 14-yard field. Like, he's just not going downfield. And when he was, it wasn't his fault, but the receivers weren't holding up their end of the bargain. And this was, once again, a team led by defense. Jared Dagey was benched in the bowl game, which is never a great sign. They had brothers up front in the Stills brothers, one of whom is gone. Dante's back. They could be quite scary at linebacker if they're healthy. Vandarius Cowan, I believe is his name, has been the Alabama transfer, has just had some super bad luck health-wise. Secondary should be interesting, but if they're not scaring people into keeping safeties back when the ears have the ball, they're sort of taking as much off the table as they are bringing it to. That's not even close to good English. So I understand the over-under. Given their schedule.
Schedule's tough, Dan.
Given that it's a tough schedule. So it's Maryland and Virginia Tech in two of the first 3 weeks, correct?
Correct.
And that's right before they travel to Norman.
Yeah.
So right off the bat, challenging. The October-November stretch will also be trying, as it's at Baylor, a bye week, at TCU, Iowa State, Oklahoma State, at Kansas State, finishing with Texas. Is not a lot of time off, not a lot of take a breath, grab an orange slice.
Yeah.
So I guess if they're able to generate some pop on offense, I guess 7-8 wins seems reasonable. But they still appear to be a bit of a half team to me.
Yeah.
Which that's when issue. We start having that 6-6, 7-5 conversation. And that's if they're able to slow down what we assume to be all gas, no brakes, Maryland team, a beatable Maryland team, but a Maryland team that will make you score points to beat them.
Yeah.
And who knows with Virginia Tech, but legit squads. If the offense is popless, who knows? I don't know.
That's what I think is really deceptive about the schedule. On paper, I'm looking at the ranking here. The schedule difficulty is 43rd nationally. The setup isn't great, though.
No.
Setup really isn't great for a team like West Virginia, where I think we both have a lot of questions. We have questions about, is this offense going to take another step forward and be better than they were, like, top 70 or something nationally in terms of the SP plus? I think the defense will still be there. They bring back a fair amount on defense. They're going to play defense. But offensively, can they get any level of consistency, a better level of efficiency? That's really the operative question there. And again, the over-under is 6.5. You can sense that Vegas is asking a lot of the same questions of this Mountaineer squad. Do you feel more strongly about 7 than you do 6?
Wins? Total wins?
Yeah.
I'd probably take them to win. If there's the quarterback's just not there, it's hard. Like,
yeah.
I'm going to take them 6-6, I think.
Yeah. So you go under. I would probably go under too, to be honest, looking at the way this sets up.
Just with the way the sport is going, I'm going to need you to score 30 points more often than
exactly.
Not.
And that's hard for me to admit. It's probably even harder for you to admit, frankly. You were a big Neil Brown guy. You love Neil Brown.
Yeah.
We both thought this was a really good fit, a good hire for West Virginia. But just a lot of uncertainty and truly one of those situations where having a lot of returning talent, a lot of returning starters on offense doesn't necessarily mean that there's going to be improvement.
Yeah. They're just like 24 seemed like against teams that I think they played Will Howard, Kansas State, but that offense sort of maxed out at 24 points most of the time.
Yeah.
Which...
All right.
Not again. We discussed the theme of the defense is intriguing. Where are the points coming from on offense within the conference itself?
Yeah.
But West Virginia in particular seems maybe a bit more pronounced at that point.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
I want to go to K-State. K-State to me is just incredibly intriguing. They've been now for 2 years running under Chris Klieman.
Mm-hmm.
K-State on paper, if you go back and look at what they did last year, I don't have 2019 in front of me, but I'm assuming it's going to be in the same category. Did not have great numbers.
No.
They lost 5 in a row to close out the year to West Virginia, Oklahoma State, Iowa State, Baylor, and Texas. They didn't play particularly well in most of those games. They played okay against Baylor. They could have won that game. But point being, I don't know if this is the type of squad that you can look at and look at these numbers and take them as seriously as you would another school, because they also beat Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
They beat TCU.
With Skylar Thompson.
With Skylar Thompson. So how do we classify K-State now as we move forward into 21? They will have Skylar Thompson back. Deuce Vaughn obviously still there. This is a team that brings back 10 starters on offense, not as much on defense. Do we feel like there is going to be an appreciable gain in terms of what this team can do from an efficiency standpoint, which is really what's been lacking for them? The efficiency consistency has not been there, despite the fact that they play really hard and are ever the threat for some of the elite within the Big 12.
Oh, I think Kansas State is more intriguing than the majority of this conference. They won 4 of 5 and then lost 5 of 5 and had 2 of those games look exceedingly winnable. The losses to, I think it was Baylor and Oklahoma State. Yes. Those 2 games are exceedingly winnable, even with Will Howard, who I think has a bunch of promise. He just couldn't really protect the ball. If Skylar Thompson's healthy, I think they're in a really interesting place, because they have one of the most dangerous players in college football in Deuce Vaughn, who is 5'5", and you will hear that all the time. Let's get past it. He is short. He is lethal. He will make teams across this conference good, bad, and everything in between. He'll make them pay. That's just how good he is. They had a crazy COVID year last year. Obviously, Skylar Thompson goes down with an injury. Wyatt Hubert was one of their better defensive players in the modern era. He's gone and covered up for a lot of thin elements to that defense up front, I would say, last year. But it was a weirdly inefficient but explosive offense, largely because of Deuce Vaughn. Almost like where Stanford was with Bryce Love. We're like, offense is in a good place, but maybe Bryce Love will run for, you know, a random 93-yard run to even out the score or something like that. So I think the steadying influence of Skylar Thompson will go a long way. I still think wide receiver and, to a lesser extent, tight end is just a big old who knows. We've been waiting for Malik Knowles to take the next step. I know Phillip Brooks is a name, but yeah, there's not that obvious game changer that can take attention away from Deuce Vaughn out of the backfield, catching the ball or running the ball. The offensive line returns guys, but they didn't get a great push last year. That was sort of a deficiency of this offense. So I don't know. It's strange to think that Kansas State has questions along the line of scrimmage after so many years where that always seemed to be a strength, but here we are. So I hope Skylar Thompson stays upright. And if he does, I think they're going to win more games than they lose. But if he again has a health issue and they're reliant on whoever's behind him this year, it's going to be another long, long year for the Cats.
The Cats have the 6th most difficult schedule per Phil Steele.
Yeah, it's not super forgiving.
It's not forgiving. The over-under per Vegas is 5.5, which feels low for this team.
I probably would take the over, but so they have the body clock game in Arlington against Stanford, right? That Stanford's going to be playing at like 9 a.m. body time.
September 4th.
Yeah. And then the Nevada game, Carson Strong has a couple good receivers. That's going to, like, that's really going to test Kansas State. And I like the K-State secondary is definitely a strength of this team, but that's going to test them. And then I have here Oklahoma State and Oklahoma, and then Iowa State the following week. Is that correct?
No, it's Oklahoma State at Oklahoma State last week of September.
Right.
Next week, first week of October, home against Oklahoma, then a bye week.
Oh, okay.
And then Iowa State. Not that it makes it that much better, but
right.
A bye week before Iowa State. Texas Tech, again, finding its way into an odd crevasse before TCU, their homecoming game.
Yeah, for some reason, schedules don't bother me with K-State. Like, I think they just sort of exist outside of our normal rules about college football. So, yeah, the back half is better. It's after Iowa State, at Texas Tech, TCU, at Kansas, West Virginia, Baylor, and they finish at Texas. Whatever. Like, road, home, back-to-backs. I don't know. For whatever reason, normal rules don't exist for the Cats. But still, I think I like the over. I think having defensive elements and a good quarterback go a long way for me.
I completely agree. If you told me right now, just based on this schedule, that K-State would start with a win over Stanford, a win over Southern Illinois, a loss to Nevada, a horrible loss to Oklahoma State, but then wins back-to-back over Oklahoma and Iowa State before losing the rest of their... Like, I would believe that. I have no way to gauge how they're going to do this season. You can bring back all 22. It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter to me, because I think you're right. They kind of exist in this weird space outside of this social construct here of schedules.
We're talking about a program who gave up 35 points to both Arkansas State and Oklahoma and flipped the expected win loss to those teams last year. Lose to Arkansas State and beat Oklahoma. So yeah, the normal rules don't apply. This is a different dimension of college football as it relates to K-State. So yeah, I have them at 7-5, you know, with breaks and an emerging receiver. I keep saying that for a bunch of teams all over the place. But, you know, with a step forward pop-wise, which I think is more reasonable with Skylar Thompson than it is, say, for Jarrett Dagey or somebody. I think I'm buying in. I think there's something about the consistency of K-State and the development of K-State. Yeah, I see them as being a legit scary team to face any given week.
Let's go to Lawrence, Kansas.
Okay.
Final Big 12 team of our part two preview.
Mm-hmm.
Kansas has the fourth most difficult schedule in college football this year.
Mostly because they're Kansas. That's what makes it tricky.
Not only because they're Kansas, but this is a tough spot for Lance Leipold. We both like Lance Leipold a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Comes over from Buffalo, where he was very successful for a couple of years, won a bunch of championships at Wisconsin Whitewater. Good coach.
Yeah. Buffalo, a tough place to win, by the way.
Yeah.
Like, not the easiest place in the MAC to win a bunch of games. No, he's did a great job there.
109-6 in his time at Wisconsin Whitewater.
I like it.
Good coach. Does Kansas win a Big 12 game this year?
They have a bye week before Texas Tech.
Okay.
Who knows? That's all. I mean, that's as good as I can tell you. Look, last year, nothing went right, just like the year before that, just like the year before that, and so forth after a brief high with Mark Mangino. Les Miles was fired amid allegations of sexual misconduct while he was at LSU. So Leipold comes over in, I believe, May. So not ideal in terms of a full off season that you don't have spring camp. The coordinators that he hired were his Buffalo guys and his Whitewater guys. So there's a familiarity there. And obviously there was an element of just do what you see as being right, because we obviously, I mean, Kansas hires a Northwestern, an AD from Northwestern to take over for Jeff Long. So this is all just, again, the studs. The appeal of this Kansas team, I guess it's another fresh start. It's a change in defense. This is not an untalented team. It's not a talented team, but it's not This is not an FCS level team in terms of roster construction. There are guys in a couple places. You know, Andrew Parchment left for Florida State. He was a standout receiver for Kansas, at least relative to Kansas. There were guys. There were guys on the defense. There were guys on the offense that just, it was such a culturally woe-begotten team that, I don't
good
know.
Word.
It just wasn't going to happen. Non-conference this year includes South Dakota, back to Coastal, playing Coastal, and Duke. So, I don't know. Depending on how you feel about Duke, that could be a weird game. If you remember, Kansas randomly went in and ran all over Boston College. So, you know, that was a couple years ago.
But honestly, I think that's the best chance at a win. I think that Duke game, it's on the road, but
yeah,
I think Duke's probably a better shot than Texas Tech.
Yeah.
And but I don't think any wins in the Big 12. I think, and that's the problem that I have here. Now, look, it's tough to dunk too much on Kansas right now. They went 0-9 a year ago. They're starting over. We know the situation. It's not even fun to like gang up on Kansas and make fun of the state of affairs here, because we genuinely want them to improve. And I think Lance Leipold's the guy who can do it. I think, as opposed to, you know, whatever they've been trying here, this is a guy who has gone in. He's gotten the most out of talent. They needed a guy like this, frankly, if they wanted to try and resurrect this program. It's just, he's up against it. He's up against it with, despite the fact that there is talent, trying to get them better organized. He's up against it, given the fact the schedule is brutal. There's not a whole lot on here. And I don't care what team you are. There's not a whole lot on here. If you were Oklahoma, you wouldn't want to play this schedule.
No.
Right? Because outside of going to Duke, they've got a game Kansas does. They open up the first week against South Dakota, which has proven to be at spots a difficult matchup.
Coyotes.
They go to Coastal Carolina the following week. And then outside of Duke, it's a Big 12 schedule that travels to Iowa State, to Oklahoma State, to Texas, and to TCU. And oh, by the way, Oklahoma and Oklahoma State, back-to-back weeks. Road tilts against Texas and TCU, back-to-back weeks. And sandwiched in between those two little stretches, they've got a home game against Kansas State, which is not, I mean, it's a rivalry, and it's
right.
Not a winnable game, in my view. So this is tough. This is going to be an uphill battle for Lance Leipold in year one, in year two, in year three, probably in years four and five as well.
South Dakota, not all that good, by the way.
I'm thinking South Dakota State.
North Dakota State. Yeah, yeah.
Maybe they borrowed something from their cross-state rival. But regardless, you get the point. It is not an easy schedule by any stretch.
No.
And, you know, I hope Lance Leipold can do it. I'm tired of seeing Kansas down and out. That's not fun for us. And I do think that he's a good coach who can make a difference over time. It's just going to take a bit.
Yeah, this is much more of a like time capsule. Let's come back and reassess in 2024 than anything else.
Totally. Totally.
Yep. So yeah, that's my half of the Big 12. I would take Oklahoma to win the conference. Not going away, because Iowa State has proven itself to be quite formidable. But yeah, I'm going to roll with the Sooners once again, because I especially think the biggest improvement continues between those two teams continues to be the Oklahoma defense more than anything Iowa State does or necessarily has the talent to do in terms of offensive improvement. And with Brock Purdy having a couple of fourth quarter eggs in him every year,
yeah,
I think
yeah.
the more reliable element is going to be Oklahoma football.
You did BYU as well, didn't you?
I did do BYU. BYU has a tough schedule. Much yeah. more so than I think we all know what they did in 2020 with Zach Wilson being incredible. And they had that, you know, the last second scheduling situation against Coastal, and they lose that game in the last second. But this is a team that essentially just trounced everybody that they play. I think the UTSA game was close, but otherwise their 2020 on both sides of the ball was truly incredible. But because of 2020, their schedule had to adjust. I think they have five Pac-12 teams this year.
Yeah.
With a new offensive coordinator, replacing a bunch of guys on both sides of the ball. They should be fine, but they're going to take a noticeable step back.
They have to. I'm just looking at it now. On offense, they don't lose as much as they do on defense, but they do lose Zach Wilson, which is a pretty big loss. And on defense, they lose seven starters. And in a year like 2021, where every team is just filled to the brim with experience, that kind of puts BYU at a bit of a disadvantage.
Yeah. No, I mean, the defense was, I mean, it's hard to say a strength considering how they were destroying teams with a balanced attack on offense, but defensively they were fantastic. And it's just, you know, it's just an incredibly tough act to follow when you look at, here we go, Arizona in Vegas.
Vegas, yeah.
Utah, ASU, later on Boise State at home. They traveled to McLean to take on Baylor. Wazoo on the road, which I'm not terribly high on Wazoo this year. But then Virginia, USC on the road to finish out the year. Even at Georgia Southern,
Georgia Southern, traveling to Statesboro
is going to be tricky, man. Option look? I don't know.
Who's the new quarterback? Jacob Conover?
Yes.
Is that the guy?
I believe so. Yeah. Just a tough ask.
All right. Who else do you have? What other independent randos?
Two very bad teams.
Okay.
New Mexico State and UMass. UMass had to throw together its schedule on the fly last year. They are once again not going to be good. I don't have much to add about it. They play good teams as an independent, and they're just not going to be all that good. And New Mexico State is, I don't have a lot of good things to say. I mean, Doug Martin, I think, has done a pretty good job in Las Cruces, but they replace like everybody. It's a full on.
They have no returning starters on defense.
Yeah. So
wild.
I wish I had more to add about the Aggies, I believe, New Mexico State. But I don't. I mean, I think Walt Bell is going to have another really, really long year at UMass. And that's it. That's all I have. I don't know. I don't know what to tell you.
The funny thing about Walt Bell, I frequent during the season, as I'm sure you do, the old Coach Hot Seat website, coachhotseat.com, where they just rank.
Yeah. Waltbell.edu. Yeah.
It's been the same turmoiled photo of Walt Bell in the first two rows of this website for, I don't know, the last 2 years at least.
So they have Pitt, Boston College, and Florida State.
Yeah, that's
tough. And Liberty on the road as an independent team. Yeah, at Coastal. I mean, it's just, they're going to get worked over.
Okay.
Some teams are just not meant for FBS football. And right now, the current iteration of UMass and New Mexico State and Kansas, just not meant right now for FBS football.
I think I was also supposed to do UConn, which I did not do, but I don't have much to add. Randy Etzel's back.
Yeah.
His fifth year back being there for, I guess, 11 years prior before his stint at Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
2-10 a year ago. I have not had a chance to look over.
2 years ago. They didn't play last year, but yeah.
Didn't play two. Yeah, right. So we'll get back to you on the UConn front, but I don't have any appreciable reason.
Will we, though?
I don't have any reason to believe that we're going to take any giant steps forward.
No.
They play Clemson, which is just brutality.
Yeah. They were in the American 2 years ago when they went 2-10. Now they're in an independent. Yeah, it's, I don't know. I don't think there's too much to add.
You want me to go Conference USA, Dan?
Yeah, take me east.
Let's go east. Okay.
Okay.
Let's take a knee here. I went through the eastern side of this here Conference USA.
Who jumped out?
The only team that jumps out to me is Marshall. The only team that jumps out.
Okay.
Marshall went 7-3 a year ago. They started 7-0. And then they got the injury bug, which sucks, particularly on offense. This year, so it was a decent enough team.
Mm-hmm.
Going into this season, Doc Holliday's out. Charles Huff is in. Charles Huff,
from
Bama. Yep.
Yeah.
This team is the clear class of the MAC East. It is not the easiest schedule. They have to play both Navy and App State. But if you were trying to handicap...
You're not super high on Navy, though.
I'm not super high on Navy.
Yeah,
I'm not. But as these things go, if you're a Conference USA team playing up against an option offense,
sure,
from the American, that's not the easiest ask in the world.
Schemes. Yeah.
So from that standpoint, at least, I'm pretty high on Marshall. I think Marshall is the clear class of this side of the conference. After Marshall, though, it gets a little bit murky. Okay. After Marshall, I'm not really sure who's jumping up, who's falling down. You could look at FAU, maybe.
Tags.
FAU went 5-4 a year ago. The defense was solid under your boy, Jim Leavitt, who has since left. Right? Mm-hmm. He's left to go to SMU. Now it's Mike Stoops. Remember him?
Of course.
Mike Stoops is stepping in to coach the Owls on defense. He has a ton of experience to work with. It's really a question of offense, though. And this is another team that was really bad on offense, which you will find to be a recurring theme as we go through the Conference USA East. It could be Western Kentucky.
Man, I was high. I was hoping for Charlotte and Will Healy.
No, we'll get to Charlotte and Will Healy.
Okay.
I don't think so. I'm not feeling that. I like Will Healy, but I'm not. Western Kentucky maybe as the next team up. They were 5-7 a year ago, a really good defense.
Mm-hmm.
But their defensive coordinator left for South Carolina.
Sure.
Maurice Crum. Notre Dame fans will remember that name. He is the new defensive coordinator stepping in. He's going to have a decent line to work with. And I think, again, it will be a situation where the defense is the class of the team. The offense was really bad. They only scored more than 24 points two times last season. And Tyson Helton did something that I have never heard of before to try and amend the situation.
Which was?
He basically got all of Houston Baptist's offense to transfer over.
That was Houston Baptist was the team that put like 600 yards on Texas Tech, right?
They were great.
Week one.
Yeah. They were great. They were great. They scored 30 points a bunch of times last year. He recruited over the offensive coordinator, the quarterback, and three wide receivers to come and play offense for Western Kentucky.
It's a strategy. I appreciate identity.
I can't remember anybody ever doing that before, but I like it. I like it. And that's why I'm on Western this year. If nothing else, they went a full offensive
Toppers.
Transplant. Full transplant of the offense. And, you know, we'll see. It could be like hair plugs and they could die. But it could also be really, really fun.
It is a lot. You would hope a team is able to develop from within to keep taking steps forward instead of hoping for the best, like going after a minor league team. Yeah.
We'll see. I don't know.
Okay.
FIU.
Bold strategy, Cotton.
I'll tell you this. It's not going to be FIU as the next man up, next team up.
Okay.
0-5 last year, really bad at passing. Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
Good at running back. The line is okay. I have no idea who's playing quarterback this year. I don't think they do either. It could be Max Bortenschlager.
Oh, man. Blast from the past, yeah.
Middle Tennessee's another one. It's an important year for Rick Stockstill.
Mm-hmm.
They were 3-6 a year ago. Bill Connolly says they were worse than their record. They have a ton of starters back.
Okay, good. Good to have starters back from a team that you just described as worse than their bad record.
They were worse than their bad record. Yeah, they were. Yeah. They really were. Bailey Hockman comes over. Remember that name? From NC State.
Sure.
He's getting out from the Devin Leary shadow. So that's okay. It's just mostly a question of whether or not it's a good thing that so many guys are back, as you said.
Right.
They had a nice little run a couple of years ago, but they started leaking oil in 2019. It continued again last year. It's an important year for Coach Stockstill, if only because is this a trend now or was last year an aberration? I don't know.
Right. Not in on the Blue Raiders.
No, I'm not. Will Healy, your boy.
My guy. I'm hoping for the best for him, but yeah.
2-6 last year. They took a step back on both sides of the ball. The defense was comically bad. So bad. This year, I think they get better. I do think they get better. They're not going to get better to the point where they're challenging Marshall. But I think better. Chris Reynolds is back at quarterback, which helps. He's a fifth-year guy. They've got a good receiving core to throw to. The defense is going to be a work in progress, though.
That's something.
Will Healy went out, tried to work the transfer portal to bring in some talent that can help plug the gaps and reinvigorate the defense. But they were really bad. They were so bad last year, Dan.
Correct.
That it's going to take a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And then that brings us to the Monarchs of Old Dominion.
Ricky Ronnie's squad.
I am high on Ricky Ronnie's squad here in Old Dominion. They didn't play football last year.
Well, this that is, helps. Rested.
They're well rested. This is one of the three teams in FBS that canceled its season. So we didn't get to see Ricky Ronnie in year one. But now technically in year two, we will see what he has to offer. Because of canceling the season, there were obviously transfers. There's just a lot of turnover now. Last time they played was 19. He did a pretty good job in his own right, holding on to as much of that talent as he could, convincing guys to stick around and not leave. Also, recruiting's been very strong. Ricky Ronnie's first class at ODU featured 17 3-stars.
Okay.
Which feels like a lot for Old Dominion. This is not like a very old FBS program.
Right.
That feels like a lot to me. Does that sound like a lot to you?
It does. Do they play Virginia Tech this year? Because I'd be scared if I were the Hokies, if they have ODU.
They do not.
Oh, well, then everything is fine for the Hokies.
They do not. But I think this is going to be a strong debut on the field, finally, okay, for Ricky Ronnie. I think he's done a good job. And I was not the biggest Ricky Ronnie fan at Penn State before he got here. But I think he's... My local knowledge of the area, let's say, leads me to believe that Ricky Ronnie is doing good things at Old Dominion. And just watch out for this program over the next couple of years. Not going to happen this year, though.
What is your local knowledge of... I'm looking it up right now. I know it's somewhere in Virginia, Norfolk, Virginia.
I have sources on the ground in Norfolk, Virginia.
Is that true?
It is true.
Do you have like a bunch of exes in Norfolk, Virginia?
I definitely do not, but the interesting tidbit here is Dariel Mack. Remember that name?
Of course.
Dariel Mack is going to be the starting quarterback. Yeah.
I'm currently looking
6'3", 230.
Okay. What else do I need to know about ODU?
That's pretty much it, Dan. That's pretty much it.
I am looking up Norfolk, Virginia right now because you claim to have sources on the ground.
I do.
And I'm going to tell you what I think about Norfolk, Virginia and their highest rated restaurants on Yelp.
I was at a Topgolf in Norfolk.
Why were you in Norfolk at all?
I was visiting friends, perhaps, in Norfolk, Virginia, not too long ago, pre-COVID, of course. And I was at a Topgolf in Norfolk amid a possible tornado warning, which did some interesting things with the golf ball. Yeah.
If their highest rated restaurants are any indication, the greater Norfolk, Virginia area.
You got to say Norfolk if you want to be.
Norfolk.
Yeah.
By Chesapeake and Portsmouth, Virginia Beach.
Yep.
It seems to be pretty diverse.
It is.
So Maymar is a Filipino poke type place.
We're not talking about reviewed. We're not talking about the winger for PSG. This is a restaurant.
Maymar with Maymar. An M at the top. Penang Town, Malaysian food, also really well reviewed. Happy Cafe, that sort of sandwich place. The Bangladeshi Bistro, super well reviewed. I'm just Mr. Shawarma. Looks fantastic.
Mr. Shawarma. Mr. Anything is a great restaurant name.
Mr. Shawarma is my father. Please call me Pete. I'm just seeing Tamarind for Indian. This is so many good options.
Yeah.
Luce for Italian.
I believe. Geography B question here. From the standpoint of what is considered the greater Virginia Beach / Norfolk area.
Mm-hmm.
It may be the largest city in the country, just in terms of like square mileage.
Really?
It's a big area.
I haven't been anywhere like Newport News, Hampton. I haven't spent any time on like the Virginia, Maryland, Chesapeake. Like I don't know this area at all. Like I've been all over the country. But this is definitely a blind spot for me. I have no reference points for what it's like to be around there.
Well, you need to get out more. I mean, that's what this comes down to.
I definitely do. It's a bunch of capes, bays, inlets, isthmuses.
Nobody can say that word.
Isthmus.
Nobody can say that
word. No, I don't know this area at all, but it looks, I mean, the eating looks terrific.
Yeah.
That's all I have.
Alrighty. Well, there you go. We'll see what the Monarchs can do this year. Mm-hmm. And we'll see if anybody can take that crown away from Marshall on the Eastern side.
I believe Purdue hired the Marshall defensive coordinator who did a lot of good things. Yep. Brad Lambert. He's off to Purdue. So, okay. I don't know if that resonates with Boilers all that much, considering, but hey, that's something.
That's all I got, Dan.
All right. That's all I have. I mean, I'm going to further research Virginia Beach.
Research Newport Virginia
Hampton,
Beach.
Norfolk, all the eating options.
Research the Pac-12 North.
Oh, that's, I should do that too. Yeah.
That's
what we're coming back with.
The final conference that we've got on the docket here. The final two preview shows that we have from a conference standpoint, again, will be the Pac-12 North, Pac-12 South. And then we will round the corner and do our national preview. We've got some other exciting shows in the queue. We talked to some coaches, Dan, which we're excited to unveil. That's very true. We're going to be dropping that show. We'll see about fantasy things. Maybe that will be on the horizon as well. So we have some open slots here before we get into the actual college football season that we will keep you updated on. Of course, for all the updates, follow along on social media. But for the true behind-the-scenes stuff, you're going to want to go out to verballers.com and check out our Discord, check out some of the posts that we put up. We got a lot of excitement, a lot of cool stuff going on as we round the corner now. I keep saying that. I don't know why. Head into the college football season in 2021.
Great. Can't wait.
For that guy over there, my good friend, Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hillenbrandt, thank you so much for downloading, for listening, for playing along at home. We will be coming back at you here in just a few days. In the meantime, stay safe, stay happy, stay solid.
Peace. And stay hydrated.
Stay hydrated. Yeah, you got to stay hydrated.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.